Well, if you recognize that music, then you're probably a fan of the TV series Bones. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today on the Ideas Network. That series was based on the life and books of our guest, best-selling author, Kathy Reichs. Her 19th Temperance Brennan book is out, and we're going to be talking with her about it and why it took a little longer than usual for her to reach her fans with a new book. So what would you like to know about forensic anthropology techniques? Do you have questions about Kathy's characters? We'd love to have you part of the conversation. You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Kathy Reichs joins us by phone. Kathy, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
It's great to have you here. You've been writing this series since 1997. What got you started?
Well, I've actually been at it since 1994 because the first book took 2 years to write because I was still teaching full time at university and doing forensic work. And then it was a year in production. So it came out in 97. You're right about that. Why did I do that? I made full professor at the university, so I was free to do whatever I wanted to do, I guess. And I thought it would be fun to write fiction. I thought it would be a way to bring my science to a broader audience. And I think back in the mid-90s, I don't know if anyone had heard of forensic anthropology. So I had the freedom to try something new. And I'd also just finished working on a serial murder case. So I had a good story idea. And what I do is I take a nugget, a core central idea of a case, and then I change all the names and the places and the details and the dates, and I ask myself, okay, well, what if this happened, or what if that, or what if that? And then I spin it off into fiction, and that's what I did with the first book, Deja Dead.
Oh, you likened it near the end of the book to, you compared your writing to zombie ants, I think it was, and the process, at least, that you used.
Yeah, at the end of the Temperance Brennan books, I usually include, I think we call it, like, from the forensic files of Dr. Reichs or something. And in it, I give a very brief description of where my idea for that particular novel came from. And in this one, at the back of A Conspiracy of Bones, which is the new book, I compare myself to an ant, because there's a passage in the book about these zombie ants that are taken over by viruses and the viruses take over their brains. And I say my feelers are always out. They're always sniffing the air. I'm always looking for a new idea. What'll be of interest to the public a year down the road from when I start a book?
Well, you know, I've talked to other authors and mystery authors use a similar kind of approach. They're always collecting little nuggets here and there as inspiration or to be used as part of a book.
Yes, I actually keep an old-fashioned hard copy file. It's called Future Story Ideas. I guess because I started doing that back in the mid-90s. And if I read a newspaper article or I attend a presentation at a professional meeting or, you know, something that comes through the lab or through the autopsy room, I may jot it down and just stick it in that file for future use. And sometimes things languish in there for a long time. In this book, A Conspiracy of Bones, I draw on the Estonia, the sinking of the ferry back, decades ago.
Yeah.
Ferry was crossing the Baltic, I think. And a relative had given me a whole file folder. She was researching that disaster, and I never got around to using it. And then in this book, it worked. It worked out that I could use it in the story.
And you also have a faceless corpse in the story, too. That was, may have been drawn on some other experience or information that you found.
I do. That was based on a case I worked near Ottawa in Canada, a journalist was murdered, and her body was thrown in the woods. It wasn't discovered for several months, and it had been scavenged by bears. So the nugget I took from that was just being scavenged by animals. How does that affect? It's like the opening scene for an episode of Bones. You know, if you've ever seen that, you see we come up with many different ways to compromise human remains. So that's how it. This story in this book opens when Tempe receives some anonymous texts, and they contain images of this faceless corpse. It has no face, no hands, no teeth, so you can't use dental identification. You can't use fingerprints. So it's a typical case for a forensic anthropologist. She does, and in the book, it wasn't bears that had been doing the scavenging. It was feral hogs, because we have feral hogs in North Carolina. Fortunately, I've never seen one, but they are out there. So I just took that nugget, that idea of a body, you know, faceless and with no fingerprints. How would typically that case go through a medical examiner or coroner? Now, Tempe has a problem in this book because she's been exiled. There is a
Margaret
town.
Margaret Havner, I think.
Margot Havner, just they have history together. Tempe had criticized Havner years earlier, and Havner is now the new boss in town. Because we learned in a short story that appeared in a book called A Collection of, what was it called? The Bone Collection, I think. that the boss that Tempe had worked with in Charlotte for decades was murdered. So there's a new boss in town, and she has vowed that Tempe will never set foot in the medical examiner office again. So Tempe's having to work. She has to kind of go rogue in this story because she can't work through the official office. She has to rely on her own network of colleagues and her own resources to get this faceless corpse identified.
And she's got her normal group that she works with, Skinny Slidell.
And her
I don't know, boyfriend or partner, Andrew Ryan.
Yeah, he's on the Montreal end, and of course Skinny is on the Charlotte end, and they're both retired now in this book. So Tempe's having to work outside the system. She relies on Skinny. I think Skinny is one of my favorite characters in my whole series. Anyway, Skinny's retired, but he's still working in the cold case unit with the Charlotte Police Department. So he's a big help to her in this story.
Yeah, he's I liked him a lot. I tell you.
You got to love Skinny, right? Not sure I want to work with him, but you got to love him.
Oh, for sure. It's interesting, Tempe and Andrew Ryan, they've been kind of in and out of each other's lives for years. Are they finally settled in with each other, do you think?
She is giving it a try. Ryan, I think in the last book, a proposed marriage, and Tempe is really not ready for that. But she did agree to live with him. So she sold her beloved condo in Montreal, and she and Ryan bought a high-rise, very slick, very modern condo together. And then on the Charlotte end, she has done modifications to the annex where she lives. To accommodate a roommate. So they're going to try to live together on both ends of their geographically complicated relationship.
And I'm sure you've thought about why Brennan is so hesitant to commit after all this time.
Well, she was married to Pete. We learn in the early books. She's already separated from him by then. But yeah, she was stung by Pete. Pete cheated on her, and so she's very skittish about committing to marriage again.
You have a quote from Virginia Woolf at the beginning of this book. It is far harder to kill a phantom than a reality. Why'd you choose that?
The theme of the book, I try to put a theme into the, they're good old-fashioned murder mysteries, thrillers, but I do like them to have a socially significant theme, let's say. And in this one, it has to do with, we are constantly bombarded with information, misinformation, disinformation. Anybody can put anything out there on a blog or a podcast or a radio show. And how does the average listener or reader sort through what is real and what is not? And when someone put, and it isn't just, you know, wingbat fanaticists that put out this disinformation. Sometimes it comes from people in authority. And how does the average person sort through and figure out what is real and what is not real? What is a phantom and what is reality?
Yeah, and in this era of all the talk and, you know, fake news and that sort of thing, that sort of fit in pretty well with what's going on right now, I think, in the country, or what's been going on.
Well, it's a very timely issue, I think. And not only can some of these conspiracy theories and, you know, just misinformation be misleading, it can also be dangerous.
Yeah, for sure. At the end of your book, and let's just get to that, and then we can go back to the book a bit. But at the end, you share some personal information with your readers. Do you mind sharing that with our listeners?
Yeah, Tempe is in a tough place in this book, partly because she's been exiled from the medical examiner office in Charlotte, but also because she's suffered some medical issues. Prior to the opening of this story, she was diagnosed with an unruptured cerebral aneurysm. She's had some surgery for it. It's very routine. They just go in and put some little platinum balls, I think, to block it off. It's a little bubble off an artery in your brain. So she's fine, but she's experiencing some post-surgical reactions. And for the first time in her life, she's having to question her own perceptions. She's having nightmares and maybe hallucinations because of the drugs she's taking, migraine headaches. And the reason I gave her the aneurysm is that I had that. And I did not have all of the post-surgical drawbacks that she's having. But I thought I would give her these challenges to work through. So not only is she working outside the system in this book, having to go rogue, but she's also having to deal with, you know, questioning her own observations and conclusions. And at one point in the story, there's a fire and she loses all of her physical evidence in the investigation of this faceless corpse. So she has nothing left to rely on but what's in her own head, and she can't totally trust that. So she's really having to deal with some personal issues for the first time.
Yeah, and she goes through some pretty scary hallucinations that may have been brought on in part by her condition, but also by other factors as well.
And we don't know what is real and what is not real. So, yeah, without giving away too much.
Yeah,
she's constantly having to evaluate what's real and what's not real.
Why was it important for you to talk about what you've been going through?
Well, you have to keep the character evolving and changing. This was certainly true in the TV show, and it's true in a continuing character series of books as well. So in each book, I want her to be facing new challenges and dealing with those new challenges. When I created the character, I didn't want to create a character that was perfect, that was this superwoman that could do it all and therefore was unapproachable. I wanted a character that would be very human, very approachable, that had issues, but hopefully issues that she was dealing with. So that's what I went through, as I say in the back of the book. So that's what my heroine is going to go through.
Yeah, I think that's great. Did you recognize what was happening to yourself when it actually happened, or?
Absolutely not. It was totally serendipitous. I was having an X-ray for something completely unrelated, and they said, "Oh no, that's fine, but there's this little aneurysm here." So we had no idea, no symptoms, nothing, never did. We monitored it for a while to see if there was any change, and there wasn't. And then one time there was. So my neurosurgeon said, you know, maybe we'll just go in and block that sucker off. And so that's what we did.
Oh, man. Kathy Reichs, our guest today, a New York Times bestselling author of mystery novels featuring forensic anthropologist Temperance Brennan. Her latest book is called A Conspiracy of Bones. Questions or comments? Have you read her books? I hope you'll join in. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Rachel Vasquez, our on-air producer, our engineer, Tyler Ditter. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, author Kathy Reichs. Her latest book in the Temperance Brennan series is titled A Conspiracy of Bones. A Conspiracy of Bones. It's great to have her with us today. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments as we move along today. The number to call again, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Sometimes your books are set in the U.S., sometimes in Canada. How do you decide what part does the location play in your story?
Well, setting plays a big part in all of my books. I never write about a place I haven't been to, because I use a lot of detail, and I don't think you can get that, you know, with Google or just on the internet. You have to go there to know what a place feels like and smells like, and, you know. So I've put her, she does move in back and forth between Charlotte, where I live, and Montreal, where I have worked for decades. That's a whole story in itself. But she's also gone to Israel in my eighth book, Crossbones, yeah. And she's gone to Guatemala. In my fifth book, I think, Grave Secrets. So she's gone to the Maritimes over in New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. So she does get around.
And I agree. I think it's good to actually be there and experience. I was talking with an author once on the show who said he would deliberately put in an inaccurate piece of information about a place, and then he would be delighted later on to see somebody else had actually used it as though it existed.
The problem is my readers are very smart. They like reading thrillers because they like solving the puzzle, and they pay very close attention to all the detail, and I will hear about that. If I get something wrong, I will hear about it.
Well, let's take some calls. Matthew in Richland Center will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Matthew.
Hello. I had a question about this idea. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I got a question about the idea of a brain infection influencing behavior. And back in the 1980s, the French doctors made a thing about the toxoplasmosis affecting fetuses with bad results. And so we were screening for that in American pregnant women. Since then, Robert Sapolsky passed along the information about toxoplasmosis from the cats, which is typically excreted in the urine, affecting mice. And in the mice, it changes their natural aversion to cat urine smell to an attraction based on the release of dopamine in part of the cat's brain. I'm sorry, mouse's brain. Maybe it was the hippocampus. But I'm kind of wondering if maybe that has an effect in human brains in a similar way and affects behavior.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but it's very interesting you bring up those topics, because the next book, the 20th book that I'm working on, is going to be looking at that kind of thing. And I'm doing a lot of research into human genome editing, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
Oh, very interesting. Matthew, have you read Kathy's books?
No. I'm listening to your show as I drive to work.
Ah, cool. Well, I thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You'll have to take a look at her her current book, or maybe her new book that's coming out. When will that be? Another year, I suppose.
That'll be another year. I'm just writing it now.
Thanks again, Matthew. Let's go to David in Milwaukee. David, hello.
Hi.
Hey, David.
And what can we?
I have a question that's not real deep or intellectual. I'm legally blind, so I haven't read the books. When I could see, I got caught up in the Case Scarpetta novels about forensic science and whatnot. But I was wondering if the television series, which I did watch, was based on the books, or are the books based on the television series? Did her and Booth get together in any of the books?
The television series is based on the books. The books were around for many years before I optioned my character. And that's how it works. I optioned the Temperance Brennan character, and then they made some changes. They made her a bit younger, and they made her working in Washington, D.C. at the Jeffersonian rather than commuting between Charlotte and Montreal. But as they describe, as the executive producers describe the show, it's based both on my books and on me. So it's kind of a conglomerate of those two things.
Hmm. Thank you, David. Appreciate the call. What did you do? You were a producer. What did you do as part of that?
I did. Let me just say to David that my books are out in audio. For the visually impaired. So if he would like to give them a try that way, they are there. I worked as a producer on Bones for 12 years. We're the longest running scripted drama in the history of the Fox network still. Mainly in the beginning, I worked with the writers, helping them with the science. I wrote episodes and I read every single script, all 246 episodes. And I would give them feedback, again, mainly on the scientific portions of it. But by season 8 or 9, our writers were fantastic. I mean, they could have sat for their master's thesis in forensic anthropology, I think.
So you did a lot of educating there.
In the early years, much more so than in the later years. They came up with, because each episode was an original story. So to come up with, you know, each one would open with a set of remains, and to come up with 246 different ways to, you know, mess up a human body was challenging, to say the least.
Oh, Kathy Reichs, our guest today, her book, A Conspiracy of Bones. You can join in, too, with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. How do you separate yourself from Tempe when you write? Is it something you do deliberately, or is she a completely different character in your mind at this point?
Well, I know her pretty well at this point. Yeah, I mean, she's fiction. I make her up. I make her stories up. I may begin a story with, you know, a nugget of something that I've experienced. Bones of the Lost. I went to Afghanistan with a small group of authors as a USO tour to thank our troops. Okay, so that was a very moving experience. So I use that. I send Tempe in a book to Afghanistan, completely different story, but I use that nugget of a case or an experience, and I know she's fictional. I keep her. My writing style is totally different when I'm writing fiction as opposed to if I'm writing a scientific article or a textbook or a case report.
Really, really interesting. I'll give our listeners a chance to join in again. You can reach us at 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. You can join in with your questions and comments as well. You know, in some ways, Tempe reminds me of Kinsey Millhone.
Yeah, she's. They're both kind of intellectual in how they approach crime solving. And you know what I think, as I said, murder mysteries. Somebody has been killed, and you have to figure out who did it and why. I think murder is the only crime where you need to figure out the motive. You know, kidnapping, you know the motive, or robbery, you know the motive. People want, you know, to steal your money or your jewelry. But with murder, you've got to figure out why it was done and not just who did it. So I think readers read that kind of book and the Kinsey Millhone,
I think it is.
because they like to try to solve the puzzle and put all the clues, spot all the clues, sort out which are the real clues and which are the fake clues, and solve the mystery before the author tells you the answer at the end.
Yeah. I think I thought that they were somewhat alike and that they're both very independent people, and relationship issues were a problem for both, or we're always in a constant state of work, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, and that's a choice the author makes. You can write a series in which your main character is, you know, happily married and living at home and going to work as a cop or whatever. I think the J.D. Robb's Eve Dallas books are like that. Or you can have a character that's, you know, complex in a different way, in that she is having difficulty with relationships.
Veronica emailed to ask what books you like to read when you have the time.
I read all over the map. I do read mysteries and thrillers. I like to know what my colleagues are doing. I don't want to get 100 pages into a manuscript and figure out that, you know, Harlan Coben just touched on that same topic. But I don't exclusively read, and I like the darker stuff rather than just, you know, tea cozy type mysteries. I do like the darker. I like the Michael Connelly's Harry Bosch character, for example, Harlan Coben, Dennis Lehane. But I don't exclusively read that. I will read. I just read Margaret Atwood's The Testaments. I forget what's on my book. Oh, I'm currently looking at the first adult book by J.K. Rowling, The Cuckoo's Calling, I think it's titled.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Interesting. Rosie in Ashland has a question or a comment, I think. Rosie, hi. Thank you for calling.
You're very welcome. My comment is to thank the author for the TV series. I do not see, and it is one of the TV series I can enjoy because it is nearly constant dialogue, the voices are identifiable, and the characters call each other by name frequently.
That's a good, very good point. Thank you for saying that. And again, if you're interested in the books, they are out in audio form.
Yeah,
I will request. I may get back to work.
Okay.
Thank you,
Judy in Madison. Your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Larry. One of my main question is, I think I missed this when I've only read the earlier books, but I was never under the impression that Temperance was autistic. And when they show it on TV, I get really confused. Did I miss something in the books?
No. And I think of it as TV Tempe and Book Tempe, and they're two very different people. You can think of TV Tempe, she's younger. You could think of it as a prequel where she's not really autistic, but she's very awkward and very stiff and very unpolished and just not tuned into pop culture. I think if you binged all 12 seasons, it's amazing what Emily Deschanel did with the character and how she evolves as a character. But we didn't really intend her to be interpreted as autistic, and we wanted the character to be different. We didn't want to just have another cool know-it-all female detective or private investigator. So we wanted to create a very unique character. So, and the upside to that is you can enjoy both the books, the book Tempe, and the television show, the TV Tempe, because they're kind of different manifestations of the same character.
Yeah, interesting. Judy, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Somebody else, a caller who couldn't stay on the line, wanted to know how you entertained the troops when you were in Afghanistan.
Oh, that was really quite an experience. I went with Clive Cussler, who just passed away, sadly. Sandra Brown, Mark Bowden, who wrote Black Hawk Down, which was interesting because we spent a lot of time flying around in Black Hawk helicopters, wearing our 40 pounds of protective gear, body armor. It was one-on-one. We went around to forward operating bases, and we would meet with the troops, and we would talk to them about the books, and they would want their books signed. And, you know, we went to thank them, and they spent all their time thanking us for coming. So it really was quite a moving experience.
Oh, man, it had to have been. I spent a short time in Afghanistan, more time in Pakistan, so it's an interesting part of the world, and I can see where it would definitely serve as fodder for other stories.
Right.
For sure. Well, one person we haven't talked to, a character we haven't talked about in your latest book is your Tempe's mother.
Oh, yeah.
And she's a hoot.
She's a hoot, Daisy. Daisy's a hoot. And interestingly, she's a little unstable. She's got, I guess we could say she's bipolar. So she's always been kind of up and down throughout Tempe's childhood. But she's now in her late 70s. And at one point where she was, we learned this several books back, Tempe buys her a computer. And to everyone's surprise, she becomes crack bang whiz at the computer. And so she can work the internet like any, 12-year-old high school techie. And she's very, very helpful to Tempe in this book. And one of the places Tempe finds herself exploring and not enjoying very much is the dark web. And we learn about the dark web and how big it is. I was astounded to learn and how much information is there and the kind of information that are in the dark web.
You say at one point in the book, when you're talking about the dark web, somebody says, well, there's more information in the dark web than there is on the regular web.
Yeah, and I give some of the statistics. They're just astounding. They were to me, anyway.
Well, they were to me, too. And I wondered at the time, I wonder, is that really true?
Well, I hope so. I did research any number of different sources, and they seem to agree.
So when you're talking about these different things in your book, I mean, you're really researching them and making sure that things are correct.
I constantly research. It's very hard for me to write without internet connectivity because I'm constantly going out. She picks up an apple and she looks at it and she thinks it's, Honeycrisp. And, would you have Honeycrisp apples available in June or whatever? So I'll go out and I'll make sure that it's every single little detail like that I check.
It must be from your first time, your first book, which was what, 93? The amount of searching or the ease of searching is probably greater now than it was back then.
Well, there's a tremendous amount of information available on the World Wide Web. So I forget what Skinny calls it, the wanky wide web or something like that. Weird wide web, I think he calls it. It's an incredibly powerful tool. You just have to, and that's one of the themes of the book, you have to be a discriminatory user. You have to be able to sort through what is real and what is not real. What are real facts and what are, alternative facts.
Yeah. I did want to mention you have a series you co-author with your son. Was that difficult to work together with your son?
Yeah, my son was a lawyer. He practiced law for all of, I think, 2 years and hated it. And he came to me and he said, why don't we do a young adult series? So I said, yeah, okay. And so he immediately quit his law firm job. And we wrote a series of 6 books called the Virals series. It's Tori Brennan, who's Temperance Brennan's 14-year-old great-niece. And she and her 3 best friends, who are all boys, kind of use the high school level, middle school level science to solve cold cases and to solve mysteries. It's called Virals because in the first book we learn they rescue a puppy from a research facility, and unbeknownst to them, it's been infected with a mutant form of parvovirus, and that can now jump to humans, and they catch it, and it changes their perceptive abilities, the way they see the world and hear the world and smell the world. So they have some special abilities, and they combine that with using science to solve cases.
I haven't read them yet, but they sound fascinating, and it was fun working with him.
It was. He was a litigator, so he was very good at constructing and pursuing an argument. He would write his sections. I would write my sections. I would then do editorial changes. We would then have our editorial meetings to discuss our artistic differences.
Oh, I love
general,
that.
It was very congenial. And we did 6 books together. So, and my school librarians love them. And the kids are loving them too. And it's so much fun to tour with that age group. It's like, they're so enthusiastic.
Oh, man. And now with this book, A Conspiracy of Bones, where we've got a faceless corpse. We've got the sinking of the ferry Estonia involved in it. We've got some fake news. We've got a new boss for Tempe, who has a grudge against her. There's a lot in this book.
There's a lot going on in this book. So, yeah.
Are you getting some good response from readers?
We are, and the book went right onto the New York Times bestseller list and the London bestseller list and the Globe and Mail up in Canada. So yeah, it's doing okay, I'd say.
I would say so too, and it really is a fun and interesting read, Kathy. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
Kathy Reichs, her latest book in the Temperance Brennan series is called A Conspiracy of Bones. I had a lot of fun reading it, and I would bet that you would as well. Well, are you a fan of CSI? You're certainly not alone. We're going to be talking with another author about one of the people, or probably the main person, who got CSI established back in around 1920 or thereabouts. That coming up next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.